What do you want your life to look like compared to where it's at now? You know, what do you need to be doing in order to get to that point? And then see where they are now and just start believing that it's possible for you. Start believing that your whole life can turn around. So it's really, how can I change my thoughts? How can I generate my own feeling inside for how I want to feel versus just letting the environment tell me? I personally want so much more for first responders, saying like, listen, don't stop there. You got so much more. People make some amazing breakthroughs, things that seem so simple and obvious that they're like, oh my gosh, I did not know that, you know, and they just learn about themselves and I love it.
Welcome to Respond Resilience, along with my co-hosts, Bonnie Rimley, LCSW EMT, and Dr. Stacey Raymond. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we welcome back Laura G. Hansen. She's a former SWAT operator, CEO of Brain Bucket Proactive Wellness, and she'll be speaking about high-performance lifestyle for first responders. Please like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and visit our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Laura after this. In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacey Raymond, and Bonnie Rimley, LCSW EMTB. And we're pleased to welcome back Laura G. Hansen. She's a certified high-performance coach who currently works as the wellness coordinator with the Virginia State Police. Laura is the author of the book, Why I Went In, and she's the CEO of Brain Bucket Coaching. A former police officer and full-time SWAT operator with the Virginia State Police Department, Laura served as the only female on the full-time SWAT team for over 4 years. And while on SWAT, she received the Silver Cross for responding to an active shooter at Building 2 on May 31st, 2019. Laura, welcome back to Respond to Resilience.
Thank you. So excited to be here. So excited to see all of you again. And pleasure to be here with Stacey this time. I'm looking forward to it.
It's great to have you back. We love our repeat guests.
I'll keep showing up. Just keep inviting me.
No, that was a great introduction, David. And I would really love to hear, and for our viewers, in what ways are first responders high-performance individuals? What do you mean by that, Laura?
So in general, high-performance means being able to achieve success over the long term while also maintaining that overall well-being, meaning in your personal life as well. So like your relationships, also your health, your hobbies, things like that. So it's things I already see first responders prioritizing in their life. They want to be successful in their career. They're driven, they're disciplined, but then they also work on building families, work on making sure they have time for their kids. And really it's the mindset that I can see in first responders where they aren't okay with settling for, well, this is okay, or, well, this sucks right now. It's all about how can I improve myself in all areas of my life? And you see that across the board in police officers, firefighters, EMS, military. It's all across the board. And I love that because it's people that say, listen, there's more for me. I have potential and I want to tap into that.
Yeah, two ways. I think that, you know, I've noticed recently first responders who exhibit that maybe in a very obvious way. One picture that showed up on my feed was a front lawn that was mowed and it looked like Yankee Stadium. I mean, it was done so meticulously, right? And that was done by a firefighter. And then, you know, we know law enforcement officers who are bodybuilders and compete in that. And they put, you know, they are perfectionists about it. And it's inspiring to see how they're able to, you know, both of those are kind of examples of high performance. And I think it's pretty typical of first responders.
Yeah, these people who value excellence and really want the best for themselves and take pride in what they do, and no matter what it is that they're doing.
Right, right. So, Laura, in what areas do you see where first responders need to up-level their performance?
It's more of keeping the intention with their high performance. I think that in general would be the thing to keep at the forefront of their mind, because so often I see people switching from, okay, I'm going to focus on my career right now because it's demanding all of this of me, and then I'm going to put all that other stuff on the back burner. Mm-hmm. And then when they go back to those areas of their life, they're having to start from a scratch, so to speak. So, I mean, a diet would be like the most common thing where you let yourself go. You haven't been in the gym for a while. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I need to start this over again. But now you're almost so far gone. You're like, ah, this is too much work. I don't want to have to do that. So whether it's that, or you talk about your relationship with, you know, let's say your spouse or your significant other, if you put that on the back burner, then it's going to be them walking out the door or having serious marital problems. And that point, you're going to feel like, is it even worth it? Is this even repairable? You know, so it's about having the intention to know what your goals are in each area of your life. And sometimes goals sounds a little intimidating. So I think of it as a first responder, like, what are my objectives in each? What do I want each area of my life to look like? And am I taking steps on a daily basis to move towards those? You know, as someone who loves working out lately in my life, I haven't been able to find that hour to work out. So I go to the gym for 20 minutes, but I know that if I go to the gym for 20 minutes a day, that's better than, you know,
0 minutes.
Yeah. 0 minutes. And then, you know, it's 3 months down the road. And now I'm looking at myself like, ooh, this is going to take, you know, a long time to get myself back. But it's the same way for your family, you know, deciding you're going to pick up the phone and talk to people, deciding you're going to sit down and have that 5 minute conversation with somebody that's you're dialed in. You know, we talk about a work-life balance, but I don't think when we think of balance, we think of like a scale and everything's even, right? But we can't simply allocate our time evenly across all areas of our life. Right. So if we're going to be able to bring all areas of our life up the mountain, up to the top version of ourselves, then it's going to have to be because we're giving it intentional work and intentional effort that's meaningful. And not saying like, well, I don't have an hour, so I'm not going to give it anything.
Right. So Laura, let's talk about mindset. You know, my career, I experienced people who basically said, you know, I'm coming here, showing up for work, I'll do what's expected of me. And, you know, and that's it. And other people who are motivated to, say, promote and become leaders and have bigger influence on the department. So what's the difference between like a survival mindset and a growth mindset?
Well, the survival mindset, I think of it in multiple ways. From a human being perspective, that survival mindset is simply, you know, I don't have time to look for opportunities because I need to basically shelter in place, hunker down, protect, throw the walls up, guard what I have and maintain. It's more about status quo because there's just too much of a storm going on in your environment that you can't afford to be looking for opportunities for growth and change, because if you do, you feel like something's just going to, you know, the ground's going to give out from underneath you. From a law enforcement perspective, or even, you know, first responder, forgive me, I always go back to law enforcement. you know, we think of survival mindset and always being aware, looking for threats, being, you know, present where we are, taking note of everybody that's walking by us. So it's not so much talking about that type of survival mindset, because those are things that we need to do. And by no means am I telling people to just walk around and, you know, skip around and pretend like nobody's around them because you're free now, you know? So I'm going to use the term fixed mindset versus the survival mindset. So that fixed mindset is what I'm talking about when I'm saying you're hunkered down. You're like, if I try and do one more thing, I'm going to explode. And, you know, that's what we want to get away from. And the way to get away from that into this growth mindset is really building the confidence and taking these acts of courage that you're facing something that poses some type of risk to you. There's some type of fear present there, and you're choosing to do it anyway, which is you acting on your courage. And then as you keep doing these little tiny things that might not seem like a big deal at the time, then you're able to take more courageous steps and more courageous actions at a time. So like within your own department, that may be applying for something small, some small position that's not really that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. But then later on, you have the confidence. You're like, man, I put in for this. I put in for that. Like, I didn't get everything I ever wanted, but I know that I have this confidence that I can go stand up in front of, you know, for me, it was like the entire SWAT team. And I know that I can perform there because I have all these other examples of performing at those lower level units and things like that. So it's really just like helping to identify what areas you can get out of your comfort zone, and then building your confidence that once you get out of your comfort zone, it's going to be okay. Like, it's not the end of the world. You're not going to fall apart.
When you retire, you're just another employee that's gone. In 10 years, you'll be, oh, yeah, that's good old what's his name.
And sometimes I think for a lot of us, it's scary to retire when you've been raised by an organization for almost three decades.
There's a running joke that says that as you retire, you're forgotten about before you even leave the parking lot.
It wasn't that I was losing the passion for the job. I decided I want to go ahead and transition and start traveling and talking to groups of people.
I lost who I was. I didn't have any plans for the future. I sunk.
And we're always saving for a rainy day. And what ends up happening is you die and you never receive the benefit of you working so hard for so long.
It's as if you've lost a loved one. For me, there's a sadness there.
They really do become your second family.
I was a firefighter. That was always what I wanted to do. Sometimes life throws you a curveball and you find yourself without an identity.
I would pass police cars and it was like somebody punch me in the stomach. Like, I got sick because I missed it so bad.
When you say I'm a retired firefighter, people, they notice. And they're like, wow, man, that's incredible. And it provides an avenue for you to be impactful.
You know, something I notice is the high performance in and of itself leads to taking on too much, saying yes to so many things, and then it throws you into that survival mode, right? And so how do we get people to highly perform, but to also have the growth mindset? And what are the benefits from that is what I would ask you next.
Keep me on track if I start to go down a rabbit hole. When I was, you know, I'm not on the police department anymore, but when I was in Virginia Beach, I considered myself a high performer. But I also was driven almost by the wrong things, because I notice now looking back that I've done so much self-work that I had these fears that were within me that were guiding me, like fear of rejection, fear of criticism, and those things drove like a perfectionism in me. So what my peers saw and what my superiors saw was, look, she's doing excellent. She's going above and beyond. She's doing all these things. But the reason I was doing those things wasn't necessarily because, I mean, part of it was because I was trying to be better and I valued that growth. But a lot of it was all this fear that I had inside of me of like, if I go above and beyond, then they'll have nothing to criticize. And then I'm not on the chopping block whatsoever, because all they're going to say is like, good job. And then if they don't criticize me, that means I'm accepted. That means I belong. That means I fit in. And for me as a person who didn't do a bunch of self-work at the time, that was very important to me. So it's kind of like a guise of like, on the outside, wonderful performance, great, productive, worked hard above and beyond. But inside I was really suffering and never enough. So it's almost like what my goal is, especially as a wellness coordinator now, is to help people be able to go into the growth, not from a place of fear, not from a place of self-hatred, but from really a place of self-love, where you're like, I love myself. I know I have potential. I know I'm here on earth I'm living for a reason. And so I want to explore that. And for that reason, I want to go forward and do things that scare me. And so what if I fail? So what if I get criticized? You know, those things don't worry me anymore. I know it's going to happen. I don't expect perfection anymore. And that's what I'm trying to guide other people into as well. Get your growth, but do it from a positive place within you, not a negative place.
Well, I think you touched on something that we've spoken about before, actually with the late Bobby Halton, and that's there are areas where we can do something that are, let's say, safer. Like if we fail, it's not going to be, you know, life or death like it is sometimes on a call. But we can maybe pick or choose something that we can do. And if we fail, okay, it's no harm, no foul, but we did, you know, kind of go out of our comfort zone. Is that kind of consistent with what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's like, what's enough challenging that it looks like it's a challenge to other people? And I can pretty much lie to myself and say like, yeah, look, you're challenging yourself. You're doing something completely out of the norm. But then like deep down, if you're going to be honest with yourself, you're like, this is safe for me. Like, this is not really me expanding. And it's interesting you say that. Like real quick, I'll say I was, after I left Chicago, cause I was teaching there for a while with their in-service. And when I left there, I started applying for the Oregon State Police, not as a wellness coordinator, but to go back into law enforcement, which is something I told myself, like, I didn't want to do. And it wasn't until I passed, like, I went through the oral board, I passed it, did the physical, the psych, all that stuff. And then I was like, what am I doing? Like, I'm telling myself, well, listen, you're flying all the way across the country from North Carolina to Oregon. It's a brand new thing. You've never been a trooper before. It's a growth opportunity. And then I just kept looking at it like, this isn't what you want to do. You said that you're, I'm talking to myself kind of, but like my objective was officer wellness. My objective is reducing the number of officer suicides. My objective is to improve the quality of life for police officers. And I was like, well, if I'm working alongside of them, I might be able to do that kind of along the way. But it's like, no, there's no way that it would have been at the speed and the rate that I could do it in another form. So I ended up pulling my application from that. You know, and at that point I had a background investigation, which as a former cop, I wasn't really worried about. So it's like, I couldn't allow myself to go back into what was really just BS growth. That wasn't really going to be challenging for me.
What I was going to ask is, you know, Laura, you have the ability to take a step back from yourself, right? And to question, is this right for me? Is this not right for me? It seems like every department could benefit from having a like wellness coordinator, you know, someone that they could bounce, you know, their career, the decisions that they're making off of, but that doesn't seem to exist in a lot of different departments. So what's your advice to first responders? Like, should they try to look for a mentor to bounce their ideas off of? Because if people stay, you don't even have to be a first responder. You stay within your own self and you don't discuss it with anyone else. You can lose direction. You know, you can burn yourself out. So what are your ideas for departments that don't have like a program like this, a wellness coordinator? What can a first responder do for themselves to make sure that they're on track?
Right. If it's to the department itself, then I would say get yourself some wellness coordinators. But there's plenty of officers and personnel that, you know, if they don't have it, then they're missing out. Then yes, I think exactly what you're saying is finding somebody in your life that possesses some type of human quality that you would like to have yourself. So it doesn't have to necessarily be another first responder. If it is, that's great. You know, if you can find a mentor that is kind of like that one step ahead of you, that's very beneficial. But even if it's somebody that is just a family friend or somebody you've known for a long time or somebody that you don't know, reach out and try and establish a relationship with them, because you're absolutely right. It's like we do so well under the role model system. So if we see what somebody else is doing and we want to be like that, then we're going to try and figure out and start emulating their behavior, their decisions, their mindset. Mm-hmm. And that's so beneficial for for first responders who are trying to go to that next level, you kind of have to see what that next level looks like, and how to change what needs to change at your current level in order to get there.
It's so interesting you bring that point up, because it makes me think of recent retirees. You know, that is a huge pool of people that the current first responders could tap into. Not only would it make the retirees feel important and still needed, which is, we know, critical, but those people have seen the trials and tribulations. They have had a step back now to realize, what could I have done differently? Or, you know, why did my career go in the direction that it did? And I think those people probably have such a wealth of knowledge that they'd be willing to share. And maybe that's a place people could naturally go. You know, if budget's a concern or other things, it's kind of a natural bridge.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes we don't take that action because it's not like an official put in place thing. But this is where, you know, we talk about high performance. So courage is one of the principles of the high performance that I teach. You know, courage for us typically involves going into some type of physical danger. But a lot of times courage is just that, you know, what's in your mind, what actions you're willing to say concerning conversations, or what asking for what you want, asking for what you need. Right. So you might know somebody that just retired from your department and you didn't spend any time with that person, but you could still reach out and say, hey, before you leave, or hey, can I get your contact information? And then get out of your comfort zone right there, because I don't like talking on the phone myself. But I tell you what, like, if you know that's going to better you to talk to that person, or even if you want to tell yourself, listen, I'm doing them a favor of keeping them involved in the job, whatever you have to tell yourself, make that phone call or text or email just to establish that relationship. And then you can pick their brain, and now they're going to say whatever to you, but they genuinely want the best for you. And how could you not benefit from talking to someone who wants the best from you?
Yeah, absolutely. And their perspective has shifted now that they're out of the department. You know, sometimes they're maybe it's easier for them to talk about stuff that wasn't easy when they were still, you know, in the job. So that's a great, great concept. I just want to comment that, you know, Laura, you do amazing video clips on Instagram in particular that I've seen. I find them to be inspiring and motivating, and you are, you know, completely honest and lay it all out there for people. And I know you did one on limiting beliefs, and I find this concept fascinating. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about limiting beliefs. What are they and how do they affect us?
Ooh, man, this is like, I love this stuff. So limiting beliefs. The trickiest thing about them is that typically we don't know what they are, because our brains do such a good job of going into that place of survival mode. So if we're not intentional about our growth, naturally, our brains only care about our survival. It doesn't care about the fact that we're living in 2023 America and, you know, the sky's the limit. Our body's like, I just need you to continue living until tomorrow. So don't do anything dangerous, because we need to live. Okay, thanks. So these limited beliefs, and, you know, Bonnie, Stacey, chime in here, but it seems like so much of them are built into our brains from our childhood when we were basically just learning about what the world is. I mean, you know, sometimes people tune out when you hear childhood. So I need you to tune back in and keep listening. But listen, when you're a kid, you're just trying to like beep up around the world and figure out like what's true, what's not true. And that's why sometimes people say, like, be careful what you say around the kids, because they'll believe anything. And then next thing you know, this kid is an adult and they believe certain things about money, about relationships, about success, about what failure means. And it gets internalized to like their actions, and it these limiting beliefs drive or rather prevent us from taking certain actions in our life. So I know for me personally, a lot of my limiting beliefs have been around like not being good enough. Or again, that's with rejection or abandonment or just failure, criticism, those types of things. So it's almost like I will, my mental thoughts, that my inner voice is on some type of circuit, and it's all based around my beliefs, what I believe to be true about the world. But those beliefs were never really confirmed with anybody. I just believe them, and so they're true.
We buy them, right? We buy them, buy into it, and hold on to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And until you realize that you have that limiting belief, which would be done by saying like, why, well, you start exploring, like, why am I not willing to go and talk to whoever? Why am I not willing to put in for any positions that seem out of my reach? Mm-hmm. You know, once you start exploring that and you start kind of getting through your BS answers that tell you like, oh, it's because it's rigged. Oh, because they want a dude for the job. Oh, it's because, I don't know, I'm too short, whatever. It could be anything. But once you get past all of those BS excuses, then you start to see like, well, it's because I believe that I'm not good enough, because I believe that a woman can't do this job. And so why would I put in for this job if I believe women can't do that job, because I am a woman, you know? And that's something that I've had to get over in multiple different hurdles in my life. So,
Well, to make a point about these limiting beliefs in EMDR world, Stacey and I work with that in terms of negative beliefs. It's the same thing that you are describing. And so we see it with every single client. And yeah, mostly it goes back to childhood. It goes back to what are those internal beliefs and messages that you got. And in our case, it's tied with trauma so many times, and people also don't realize that, right? Mm-hmm. So what you're saying dovetails nicely with our message about EMDR, which is clearing the trauma and the negative beliefs of self is what allows people to get to that growth mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. It like frees your mind. Like that's the best way I can describe it is feeling like I had all these chains that were just like attached to my waist. David, I don't know if you were ever one of those firefighters that like wrapped the tires with the strings and like did the sled work and stuff. I don't know. Virginia Beach, they were doing all kinds of weird stuff with tires. So
yeah. That's you know,
that's like
that, the it's supposed to make you stronger, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I just picture like all of these like tires with ropes attached to me. And then once I break them off, I'm like, wait a second, that's not actually helping me to believe that. Well, forget that. I'm done with that now. And once you identify it, you know, I'm able to call myself out on it. I'm like, wait a second, am I not doing this because I think, you know, it's because I'm not good enough, because I'm a woman, like that. Come on, stop it. Get out of here. We're not doing it anymore. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Agreed.
Again, it takes some ability to either, as you say, you know, go inside and where does this come from? You know, where does this limiting belief, I'm not smart enough, I'm not strong enough. A lot of people hesitate, I think, to do that. And that's why I think it takes, you know, a friend, a confidant, could be a therapist. It could be a wellness coordinator, if you're lucky enough to have one. Or a superior that you trust, and to bounce ideas off of them, right? Because a lot of that realization is going to come from running it past someone who has a more objective take on it, right? We can get lost in the forest of the circus of our minds, us as individuals.
Yeah, and something I'm realizing is that, you know, not everybody had a cheerleader growing up, and people who maybe didn't play sports or didn't have a strong support system at home. Right. You know, we have to remember that, like, just because they're here standing beside us today doesn't mean they got here the same way we did. So sometimes that person is just stuck in their head and they're telling themselves that they're not good enough. And what's fueling them to their success at this point is like trying to prove the world wrong. And it's working for them, but it's not the best mindset that's going to be able to be sustainable to keep them continuing to progress. Like at some point they just shut down and say, this is good enough. I've gotten this far. And again, hunkering down into that survival, like I don't need any more growth. I'm just going to look around, be grateful for what I have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I personally want so much more for first responders, saying like, listen, don't stop there. You got so much more. But as you're saying, Stacey, if you have that mentor, that role model, or even just a peer that believes in you and tells you, like, just says, listen, you know you can do more, right? You know that you're fully capable. You know that what got me here in this position, you have that same thing within you. You can do this too. And they're like, what? How do you know that? How do you see that? Because I don't believe it. So what are you looking at? Mm-hmm, but that's all they need sometimes, to just say like, you know what? I can keep going. I do have more.
I mean, I have a story about that, which, you know, what you're speaking about, I think is exactly what happened with me. And that was, the promotions were posted and people are starting to sign up, you know, put in their resumes. And I was saying to my captain and a guy who also got promoted before me, you know, like, I don't know how many more years I have in the department, blah, blah, blah. I had a bunch of, you know, excuses why I shouldn't do it. And they were both, you do it for 3-5 years, whatever, since someone else will take it, you know, take the baton from you. And the other guy said, you know, do this, you know, you can do it. It's in your wheelhouse. Between the two of them, they just dissolved all these limiting beliefs I had set up why I should not apply for that position. And because of that, I did apply and I did get promoted and I did go into it without this, you know, concern that I didn't deserve it, that I wasn't worthy of it. And they reframed the whole thing for me, you know, in a couple of sentences and changed the game.
You see, David, it came from the outside, though, too, because if you were just left to your own devices, you wouldn't have put in for lieutenant. Yeah, right. So my concern is the limiting belief. I'm a first responder. I have to figure this out for myself. Mm. Right. I can't bounce this off of somebody else. I'm that fierce independence. Right. So that's one limiting belief that really concerns me.
Check it.
The other thing is, I've looked into the histories of first responders, and I'm sure Bonnie can attest to this too, it usually comes from having to pull their childhood comes with a lot of experiences. They have to pull themselves up by the bootstraps, whether it was, you know, a family of divorce, or there's some element of abandonment, or someone, you know, just wasn't really there to support them. There was alcohol, there was any other form of drug abuse or physical abuse. And so they had to really rely on themselves. And I think that's why a lot of first responders end up from a childhood like that, going in, becoming first responders to kind of protect people from bad things and to give structure to people because they know how valuable structure is, perhaps because they didn't have it. So
I agree with you completely. And I see this so much just like you do.
Yeah.
It breeds, that kind of childhood breeds a fierce independence, which is great. I mean, hey, it's great if you can be self-sufficient and driven and do all these things alone. But when you don't let people in, that's where you're really going to have a problem. That's where people have issues in intimate relationships or marriages. And, you know, because those people are used to being alone and they really believe they don't need anybody else. And that's the roadblock we have with therapy sometimes. Well, I've made it alone for 30 or 40 years. Why do I need you therapists now to walk into my life and tell me how to do things differently? Well, it's all well and good that you can be alone and independent. And our culture, I think, feeds that. It values independence. And we look down on people who are dependent on others, or we come up with words that people use against them. But so our culture kind of feeds that. But at the end of the day, we're humans and we're meant for connection. And first responders, I think, have that fierce independence affliction more than any other group I've ever seen.
I see it as well. And I know that I was in the same boat when I was there. You guys remind me of, like, I've never done a Spartan race, but I did something that's along that same type of line where, you know, you have to do all the obstacles and running in between. And at the very end of this race was this huge wall. And now I'm 5'3", so the height is not really a friendly thing for me. But it didn't matter whether you were, you know, 7 foot tall, you had to have somebody else that was on top that reached down and held out a hand for you and pulled you up. They basically made it so that you could do the entire race by yourself without anybody's help until the end. You needed somebody to grab you up. And so I think of that as first responders, because the truth is, and maybe this is not something people want to hear, but when you have a ceiling when you try and do it yourself, and you can go very high, you can reach the mountaintop that's just below the clouds, let's call it. And that's impressive. And yes, you're strong. And yes, you're resilient. And yes, like, that's commendable. And you can lead others to greatness because of that. But the thing is, if you want to keep growing, if you want to see your true highest potential, you have to start getting other people involved. You know, whether you are a person of faith or spirituality or anything, I mean, you look at humans and how we're designed to work together. You know, with first responders, we naturally are all part of a team as it is. You know, if you're not on the SWAT team necessarily, but you're on the police team, you're on the fire team, you're on the EMS team, you know, so we get this idea of camaraderie and the benefits from connection. But the thing, the bottom line is, it doesn't matter what profession you're in. You need other people if you're going to keep going higher. We need that combination of resources, of mindset, of, you know, show me something, teach me something. And we have to be willing to look to others if we're going to keep growing and not staying at our own limited potential, which we can only go so high as one person.
Is there ever a point of reaching or achieving high performance and then that's the end?
It's a continuous progress. Continue, because it's a continuous journey. We're never going to be perfect, right? I can say that as a recovering perfectionist.
recovering perfectionist.
You know, it's you get to that point where you're like, wow, I am so proud of where I'm at, and where it's okay to be proud of where you're at. And say like, okay, now where's my next level? Where else can I be improving? You know, you can have greatness in every area of your life, but still you're like, well, how can I develop this relationship to be even stronger? Or how can I go to that next level? Let's say you're the chief of police. There's still more for you, right? Like, how can I change this department and leave my mark on this department? How can I give back? It's all about that service, right?
Right. So that's what I find is like when people get to that level of achievement, a lot of people just want to help others at that point. They want to teach.
Yeah.
They want to support others, guide others, whatever the case may be.
Or there are some of us
continue.
I think I'm in this category, but you know, it's like you achieve that one big one and then it's like, all right, what's next? What's my next big one that I'm going to look for and work towards? And it's interesting to think about how some people have that maybe intrinsically, maybe learned, and others don't. So I would imagine, and this is where I want to ask you about coaching, but is coaching a form of therapy? What does coaching do? And could it address that awakening up inside in people of what's the next thing?
That's an awesome question. So it's not therapy in a traditional form of therapy, but it is a form of how can we get you out of your own way, which I think therapy does a lot of. I'm still in therapy. I love it. I wholeheartedly believe in it. It has plenty of benefits and I'll never put it down by any means. There's progress that I've made through therapy, but there's also progress that I've made through coaching. And in coaching, your coach is going to know, like, listen, this is something therapy, like, related. This is not my wheelhouse. You need to talk to somebody who's trained in that if you want to specifically talk about that. But it's amazing. It all has to do with our mind, right? So it's just a different tool for getting into your mind and a different way of again, how do I get out of my own way? For me, like I can tell you, coaching helped me realize that I was holding myself back because I didn't believe I was good enough because I was a woman. It also allowed me to wholeheartedly believe in myself, which I will admit I didn't even do until July of this year. So, you know, we want to talk about transformation. There's huge transformation that can occur through coaching, but there's also huge transformation that can occur through therapy. So it's to me, I want to be like my highest, truest potential, right? I get so excited about it. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do therapy. I'm going to do coaching. You got something else for me over here? Let's do that too. Like, I would just want to explore and learn and figure out what life is and how I can be better and how I can be better for other people. And then whoever wants to listen to me, I want to share that information with.
No, it's infectious. Your excitement, enthusiasm is inspiring to hear and to see. And so let's say somebody wants to work with you at Brain Bucket Coaching. What does that process look like?
So I have a 12-week coaching process. It starts off with the 12-week program. And it's called high performance coaching. It's something that I have been certified to do. So it's a curriculum based coaching. So, you know, I was up in Chicago and this one disgruntled officer said to me like, oh, life coaching, what is that? Like you call someone and tell them to get out of bed in the morning. I was like, no, it's a little more complicated than that, you know? So, it's more of me guiding, my client through a series of questions and trying to figure out certain areas of their life. So talking about like the clarity for, do they know what makes them happy in life? If you don't even know what makes you happy in life, then you're not going to be living intentionally and going towards those things that are fueling you up. You know, some people are just, they don't realize that they're not happy simply because they're not doing things that make them happy. And it's like, well, if you're only watching like sad movies and sad songs, so to speak, then it's like, well, no wonder why there's no joy and happiness in your life, right? So it's kind of like just bringing that awareness to people. But then clarity also turns to like, well, what do you want your life to look like compared to where it's at now? You know, what do you need to be doing in order to get to that point? So clarity is a huge session for that. But I mean, it expands to energy, how they can be shifting their mindset into a way that fuels them, rather than just being like, okay, food is how I get energy throughout the day, you know, but then you go to meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting and you just feel so dead inside and miserable, you know? So it's really, how can I change my thoughts? How can I generate my own feeling inside for how I want to feel versus just letting the environment tell me how I want to feel? So honestly, between clarity and energy, those are usually two areas that can completely change a person's life and lift them up so that they're not really living in the same world anymore, strictly because they're not living in the same headspace anymore. And that's huge. So it just continues 12-week process like that. And people make some amazing breakthroughs, things that seem so simple and obvious that they're like, oh my gosh, I did not know that, you know, and they just learn about themselves. And I love it.
Really powerful stuff, I think, for police organizations to understand. We don't have to tear everything down. And if we focus on the most important job, the most important position is the chief of police, and we get that hire right, everything else takes care of itself. It really does. Organizational culture. I think if we change that, matter of fact, I know we change that, we're going to see cops come back. We're absolutely going to see cops come back. We're not going to have people, good people left to do this job. As hard as it is, when we now create cultures where we don't even value them or we don't appreciate them. Hopefully a lot of leaders that read this book and say, you know what? I need to get into therapy. I need to talk to somebody. I need to get a coach. I need to freaking figure out who I am. I just hope that happens, because you'd be welcome to join the club, because we're all in this thing together.
You know, I'm just always inspired when we have these conversations. Thank you so much for explaining the coaching, because I think that's confusing sometimes to people. So thanks a lot.
Yeah, it's more than a slap on the back and saying, go get them, Tiger.
Yeah.
Laura, is there anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to speak about?
Let's see. I mean, you probably can't get me to shut up if you really open up the door for me that way. So I'll just leave it with saying, you know, whoever it is that's listening, you truly have so much potential within you. And if your first thought right now after that was, no, I don't, then keep listening to this podcast. Keep listening to people who will shift your thoughts and tell you about their past that wasn't in a good place, because you might be able to connect with that. Mm-hmm. And then see where they are now and just start believing that it's possible for you. Start believing that your whole life can turn around. Because I can tell you that I just started wholeheartedly believing in myself, because I did not think that for someone who's been through so much in my life, from abandonment, through adoption, through multiple divorces, through trauma, on the job, off the job, I just didn't think that a certain level of joy and happiness and success was possible for somebody like me, maybe for my neighbor, but not for me. Mm-hmm. And recently I've gotten to the point where I wholeheartedly believe that I can do anything, no matter how improbable it seems. And it's not because, you know, someone's going to come hand it to me. I'm going to have to put in the work, but so will you. But the thing is that you can do it. You just have to believe that. And if you believe it just by saying it to yourself and you feel like it's a lie every single day, just keep saying it over and over and over again. And one day it's going to sink in and your whole life's going to change. And I want that for you.
Well, that's amazing wisdom. And thank you for sharing that. And let us know, where can we find you out there on the internet and social media?
My website is lauraghanson.com. And that's H-A-N-S-O-N. Apparently I say it and people think I got an E in. But yeah, LauraGHanson.com. My Instagram is somewhat similar. It's Laura_G_Hanson. And David, you're inspiring me to continue my videos, so I appreciate you you saying that to me earlier.
Yeah, it's the best thing on Instagram as far as I'm concerned. I really love what you do there. And I think it's really worthy of checking out, because you talk about things that you don't really hear people speaking about, and it's all relevant to the law enforcement and first responder community. So, Laura, pleasure to have you back again. Wishing you massive success with your wellness coordinator post and also with Brain Bucket Coaching.
Thank you so much to all three of you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura. It was great meeting you. You're very inspirational. So.
Thanks, Laura.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
We invite you to like and subscribe YouTube, Responder Resilience, Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV. We're on bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, and all the other podcast platforms. And check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe. Take care of yourself.